before they did the, it was a story that you would read right before you read the Java House story.
Right. It was a story in the daily paper, the Santa Cruz County Sentinel. I think it was on the 27th or the 28th. But it actually mentioned the issues. What we're looking for is not just to show the Java House as treating is acting badly and encourage it to act better, but we were looking for general policies for restaurants and businesses downtown. If there's a problem, you mediate it.
Well, now what's up with that? They say you call those demands.
I would say those are demands, yes. I regard those as demands, yes.
Well, what about the fair hearing policy? The way they paint that up, you know, I don't understand what do you mean by that. Who mediates that?
Well, and I see, a lot of these ideas need more work in the sense that they aren't finalized. I mean, I suggested a 30-day suspension policy at maximum. I mean, so that cases would be re-examined after 30 days. If you get kicked out of a cafe for, you know, offending the owner one way or another, that the owner within 30 days, you know, gives you a second chance, provided he didn't, you know, break any property, you know, shoot anybody in the place, or, I don't know, shit on the plates, or whatever, or in the Wheaties.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the coffee roasting company apparently has been doing this. I mean, they've had their problems with people, but the people come back a month later and they let them in, and that's, I mean, you know, I can understand frictions arise.
Okay,
I think
that's policy.
That's
reasonable.
Yeah.
But what about the fair hearing policy? What's a hearing?
Well, a fair hearing.
Are you going to have like a little panel
convened
to discuss it? Like, what do you mean?
Let's see if anybody's there. Well, I was going to suggest that there actually be a kind of a board of people that if somebody's going to get kicked out of a cafe, that the owner has to essentially present a statement to that board saying why. And that board might have one homeless person, one merchant, I don't know.
We're going to have a business owners citizens review board.
Well, just the point is not that this board would have much power, but that when a merchant kicks somebody out, the merchant has
merchant
to have in the back. She or he has to have in the back of their mind that they are going to have to justify it, at least to the extent of making a statement, that they don't have this arbitrary absolute power that they have now. I mean, they have the power, but at least they know it's going to be examined somewhere. I mean, Stuart Martin, who kicked this homeless man out of his store and then said, "You're a thief. All homeless people are thieves," and then started shoving him down the sidewalk, apparently he felt supremely powerful. He didn't have to answer to anybody for that, right?
He did, and well, that type of thing, you know, this guy has also become a criminal by his own standards of the laws he professes to follow, and the system that backs his whole capitalist trip down there on the mall is based on laws and cops and the rights of one over the rights of the other, and he is violating those same laws. You know, he assaulted somebody.
This is Stuart Martin,
public,
by the way,
in a public place
of the ID building.
This is beyond merchants abusing their authority.
Right.
You know, that's not authority. Nobody has the authority to do that. Period. Allegedly.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You know, but in answer to your question, I believe we're talking to the notorious musician Phil Free. I recognize your voice there.
Sorry, I was trying to be really mellow so you wouldn't guess, but I got worked up when you mentioned Stuart Martin.
You always get worked up, but you and Stuart have
really
got some kind of a thing going on, haven't you? So it's a kind of a rocky relationship between the two of you, isn't it?
What?
It's a rocky relationship.
Well, you know, I hunger for him secretly.
Well,
you know, if that whole yuppie thing.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
That's
you know,
your
I
secret
want to mess his hair up. You give him a big kiss.
It's that little mustache you like, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyways, here, wait. Somebody else wanted to ask you about that.
Uh-oh.
Huff. Hi.
This must be Skidmark's Bob Duran, the roving reporter.
Yes.
You know, now that I have you on the phone, I have something to ask you.
What?
Well, you know, we got this stuff that how first night or second night, I guess, the second time they've had this New Year's Eve celebration on the mall was so wonderful and exciting peaceful and all this. You were wandering around doing interviews. In fact, you interviewed me when we did our kind of impromptu demo in front of the ID building.
Oh, yeah.
On the first night a year ago, you or others gave me reports of poor people who were kind of treated not too nicely by the police in their attempt to make everything look picture clean and you know, Carmel-like for the general populace. What happened this year? Were you around? There was apparently some disturbances.
Yeah, I was. Let's see. Just kidding. Me and Phil Free. And
that's your band. Yeah.
Our band. Yeah, which is coming out with a new album next week. We'll be in front of the record store near you on the sidewalk selling tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we were playing on the mall, and we played Momia Coalition to Free Mumia, which has meetings on Mondays at 9 at the 314 Front Street.
By the way.
Or at 7, excuse me. Mm-hmm. They had a table up about Mumia and all their various literature and stuff, and they weren't being hassled, but they observed, like, a homeless man being taken away for being drunk.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's wrong with that? So drunkenness is, you know, I mean, there are young children present. It's supposed to be an alcohol-free mall. Do you object to a drunk man being removed from the sight of the young'uns?
A drunk man on New Year's Eve? Gee, there's not too many of those around.
Well, wait a minute now. Was he drunk and disorderly, or was he just drunk?
He was just drunk, from what I heard.
Was he drunk, and was he engaging in the crime of poverty?
Probably.
Well, that
I noticed that quite a bit that night. As a matter of fact, we sat up and played, and I do a song that talks about Mumia and stuff, and I the word fuck comes up every now and then.
My goodness. Okay.
Oh, did I say that on the radio?
You did, yes.
Well, anyway, Officer Perry, better known as RoboCop,
yes,
comes over to me, and he states that I was offending this woman and her child, or this woman, actually, just this woman,
mm-hmm.
Saying that her child was there and I was being obscene. And I said, well, is anybody pressing charges? And he said, no. And I said, I just wanted you to know. And then he started going off about him being there for my political, whatever, obsession or something. And I said, well, obviously, you know, you are here for my political agenda, you know. And
you said to suppress your political agenda.
Yes, yes. And then he walked away and hung out with, was it Sergeant Watson, I think, who was there on May 11th with his camera undercover. He was there, and Food Not Bombs came and set up, and we were kind of concerned about Food Not Bombs setting up and feeding, but it's kind of funny, Sergeant Watson had his back to us the whole time we set up, and then he turned around and just saw Food Not Bombs set up with a banner and everything. It was pretty beautiful.
So in other words, Food Not Bombs did serve on New Year's Eve without any incident.
Without incident.
Well, that's great. I mean, and matter of fact, I understand that there are Feed the People, the other group, which serves Monday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, is also serving without incident at the Cathcart and Pacific.
Yeah, supposedly, yeah.
So there seems to be an enforced hands-off policy with respect to criminal cooks.
That's it, you know. I mean, we're out there, you know, getting the food that otherwise be thrown away in dumpsters or thrown in some, you know, dump hole somewhere, and we're making meals out of it. And
how can people help Food Not Bombs?
Well, you can come to our meetings on Monday nights.
What if you hate meetings?
Well, let me get through the meeting part.
Yes.
Mondays, 7 o'clock at the Underground Cafe. Come down, come one, come all. Or you can call us at 425-3345. And another plug is Monday, Food Not Bombs Arcata is going to court.
Are you taking a caravan up to Arcata, which is many, many miles to the north?
I hope so, if we could find someone with a vehicle, preferably a van or a bus or something.
So if anybody has a van or a bus, they should call 425-3345.
That's
and
it.
Is willing to take that sucker all the way up to Arcata, which
oh,
is
yeah.
about, what, 100 miles south of the Oregon border?
Yeah.
Nice little town up there, by the way.
Uh-huh. And
what about for those who don't have buses, aren't willing to go to Arcata, and hate meetings?
Then go shop at the ID.
And who shop at the ID? No, even who, but they don't even have to shop at the ID, which I, by the way, discourage at this time.
Yeah, and if you want to go to Bookshop, Santa Cruz, or Crown, go to Logos.
No. What about people who want to help Food Not Bombs?
Well, we'll also probably be cooking on site, what is it today, Friday, tomorrow, Saturday, if it's sunny, we'll be cooking on site at River and Josephine.
Mm-hmm.
About 10 o'clock, we'll be there, and we'll be chopping vegetables and making soup to be served at 1 o'clock.
So are you inviting Presentium, the notorious street lawyer, to bring his briefs of all sorts to, and his brief statements, which sometimes get longer and longer, to your site at River and Josephine, 10 o'clock tomorrow?
Sure.
Will you insist he chop celery?
Who are you talking about?
Well, you haven't been listening to my show, have you?
No, I haven't.
This is a theologian, legal philosopher, and distinguished-looking guy in the studio with this distinguished-looking woman who I've been trying to get on the air without any success.
Uh-huh.
She's not yet ready for prime time, but we're going to attempt to prime her anyway. So they may show up to do some vegetable cooking, chopping tomorrow, or maybe he's looking dubious.
Really?
His mouth open. Maybe not. I don't know. In any case, anybody who is interested can show up at River and Joseph. Hello? Hello? Oh, dear. Well, I think we've lost our man. Are you there? Oh, dear.
Well, it was fun while it lasted. Presentium, do you have any comments to make about the last hour or two? And it doesn't have to have anything to do with the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, or even the body of humanity in existence.
Well, I'll talk about the galaxy then. Or I'll talk about the body of God directly. You know, then we can just wipe it all out.
Wait, we have an incoming call here. Yes, who is
sorry about that.
I see. Yes, a likely
hung
story.
Up the phone. Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically, just to cut it short,
yes.
Come on out to River and Josephine tomorrow, about 10 o'clock, if you want to chop vegetables.
Check.
And actually, I tried to get some Jehovah Witnesses to chop vegetables one time. They were trying to push some of their literature on me.
I think they were interested in chopping up your, well, we won't discuss that at this time.
And then I said, hey, I think God would like it if you came and chopped vegetables with us and mm-hmm. incited revolution. And then they kind of like looked at me with a stone face and said, well, we got to go.
Gotta
so
go.
Anyway,
uh-huh.
This is Skid Mark Bob out.
Hey there, Skid Mark. And I encourage everybody who's interested to come tomorrow to the demonstration at noon at Mission and 16th in San Francisco. You may know that for those who don't have either the wherewithal, the time, or I don't know what, to get up to Arcata on, I guess it's Tuesday, for the trial of the folks who are six
right.
people accused of serving free food in Arcata.
People are leaving tomorrow?
There's a demonstration in San Francisco at noon
uh-huh.
tomorrow at 16th and Mission Streets, which concerns first the people in Arcata defending their rights, second,
uh-huh.
Defending the rights of the Sacramento Food Not Bombs, which apparently is under attack by the Guides, which is the sort of the Sacramento version of the Hosts, the
uh-huh.
downtown merchant-supported para-police force.
Right.
And finally, the case of that much misunderstood but very well-beloved activist, Robert Norris Kahn.
Hang him!
Yes, who was convicted of serving free food by jury trial in San Francisco. And now, as...
Off with his head!
That's what the Court of Appeals said. They turned down my appeal, and I am now appealing to the California Supreme Court. And I'm a very appealing guy, and
yeah,
since we know that...
Are.
Tomorrow at noon, I'm going to be making speeches in San Francisco and probably serving soup.
Oh, beautiful.
Can you believe it?
That's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Okay,
beautiful.
Well...
The road is beautiful.
Me and Phil got to go work on the mall, so if anybody wants to hear some good revolutionary music, come on out to the mall right
and
now.
When is your show, Bob, for those who want to tune in and catch what you have caught yourself on the mall, which hopefully is nothing communicable?
Well, Sunday night, I usually do a show from 9 on. But I may be on my way to Arcata. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I see. So this is in violation of the existing Food Not Bombs the existing free radio guidelines, which limits me to a 2-hour show and gives you 3 hours plus many more. I think we have to bring this up at the next collective meeting, Mr.
Wiggy. It's a night show. You weren't there for that meeting.
I see. That's a good point. There is, by the way, a notice up here on the board which encourages everyone to get their butts to the next 7 p.m. meeting, January the 7th on Sunday, at Ed Fry's office, which is at, what, Cedar and Maple, is that right?
You're not supposed to say that on air, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I just said it. It's right across from the bagelry. Show up at the emergency meeting or else you're going to lose your show. So for all you buffs who want to keep your shows, show up at the meeting.
That includes you, Al.
You can show up in the buff.
All right. Especially Al.
Yeah, buff it up.
All right, buff it up.
All right.
Take down, bye.
Thank you, Skid Marks.
Well, that was... one of our more rambunctious hosts and outspoken musicians, as well as a notorious dad of a new baby poo. Not so new these days, but the babies seem to be popping out all over. Skidmark's Bob Duran. We have, it looks like you're leaning into the mic there, presenting. Anything you want to say?
I was leaning in, just in case.
No, is this you getting indigestion hearing all this? What's going on?
Well, I have a great sense of humor. However, I think the situation that we're facing is obviously very serious.
Oh, yeah.
And it's reaching an epidemic proportions. And I think the lawful recourses that remain is rather dubious as to whether the city councils and all of those elected officials are going to really pay attention. So I think along the way, we're going to have a division coming up, and then I think Americans are in for a little rude awakening of sorts, of many kinds, because this has been going on for like several generations, over 60 years it's been going on, so many have never learned what the law is, never studied in school, and everyone is under presumption that you're supposed to know what the law is and function properly. Well, a pretty serious situation. from my perspective, I think it provides a condition for applying a cosmic law, a cosmic principle, a cosmic reality. It requires living a love that's real, and a beauty, and a soul that's real every second of our living moment on Earth. And perhaps then we won't have anger, and we won't have guns, and we won't have a lot of things that are yelling back and forth, and we'll have some laws by which everyone can live, and even utilize the principle of love as a basis for world law. And if the IRS codes don't have it, which they do not have, we can strike it out as null and void without having to appeal to a Congress or any other so-called lawful body of authority, because they're not applying this law in life on Earth, which is what we're here to do.
Well, Brazilian, this is, of course, with our 6 minutes left in the show, or is it seven? I want to encourage anyone who wishes to take the subject up at greater length to call at 423-HUFF. Leave a message in the time that you can be reached, and I will personally, if Presenium deigns to call me later, pass on that information and get all you anarchist types together. And who knows what's going to happen next? I mean, free love? Who knows? Certainly love of the world, a more sensible approach. Who can tell? I got to point out to you, I am an incorrigible joke maker, and I can't be broken from it. A 12-step program has been tried and failed.
We might raise the tree of life here on Earth. I mean, there are a lot of really beautiful redwoods and oaks and all kinds, but we might really raise a tree of life in which everyone can really see the love that really is.
I'll accept that. And I'm now going to turn to the conclusion of Michael Pachovis's Berkeley interview about what's happening in Berkeley and the upcoming Tuesday City Council meeting there that will attempt to eliminate, as we know it, People's Park as we know it. We join that interview in progress.
Is a divergence, I think, from what the university's notion of an open space is. For an example, the plan would call, if we accepted it, for the main assembly area where we hear concerts and where we gather for speeches turned into an athletic field.
Really?
And a number of people in the community are very upset with that whole notion. Some of the discussions that have taken place in the youth committee have been to regrade the area and to install institutional lighting, and it would call for giving the University of California exclusive right to that to the use of the park after work hours up to 5 nights a week and 8 weekend days during the year. And that's clearly contrary to the philosophy that people have had about the park being open to everyone who wants to come and use it.
Now, wasn't there a major controversy not only in 1969 when the park was established and the National Guard under then Governor Reagan attempted to close it, actually did for a year or two with a fence, but there was also a renewed controversy in 1991 when the university built a very expensive redwood sand volleyball court, which has lain largely unused, and then subsequently basketball court, which I guess is more used, and a combination bathroom cop shop facility. There was a lot of expense and violence and community uproar over that in 1991, wasn't there?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we've had 26 riots. No, we've had, let me think, is it 26? Yeah, I believe we have had 26 riots in the last 27 years in regard to that park. And
now, is it in regard to the park, or is it in regard to the university's attempt to essentially close down or monopolize the park?
It's generally been exacerbated by something heavy-handed by the university.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these kinds of demonstrations, and I'm not going to call all of them riots. Some of them are just flat-out demonstrations against what the university has wanted to do there. But oftentimes, the university will want to go and impose itself and do some sort of a building action on the park, and
hang on for a second, Michael. So you were saying?
Yeah. I think the demonstrations have usually been a result of something that the university is going to try to impose its will on the community, and it's inside of the passions of a lot of people out in the community. to resist that. In addition, I think that people have accepted the park as their park, and I'm talking about in the broadest general sense. And there's always been this issue of who owns the park since that time. People feel that they took it back from the University of California, that the University of California acquired it in a non-legal way through eminent domain when there wasn't exactly a reason in their minds for wanting to go ahead and tear down the nice houses that were on the park,
mm-hmm.
and that in fact we wanted to see it maintained as an open space free speech arena. Now, the current plan would change some of that. For an example, at issue are three or four different things that are thorny. One is that the University of California, and the mayor would like to see the free box removed.
This is a clothing box where people receive and give clothing back and forth?
That's right. That's right. And they would also like to see the elimination of any kind of food being given out to people in the park. Well, they say food services, but in fact there are no food services programs going on in the park right now. Food Not Bombs serves food in the park, and as do a number of different church groups, not only from Berkeley, but from as far away as Napa and Vallejo, who come up here and feed people. In addition, a number of merchants in the city come and bring extra food from time to time for people to eat.
Yeah.
And the mayor and Chancellor Tien had written a letter to the youth committee saying that they want to see those activities stop. That has met with rather strong opposition by the majority of the community, including a group of 25-plus churches that don't like that notion. So basically what we have at hand here now in the issues that are going to be before the council is, who manages the park? How do we deal with it? There's been a strong cry for transfer of the ownership of the park to the from the University of California to the city, for an example. And that has been a prospect that has been on the table in years past, but it usually came with very heavy strings attached on behalf of the university that the city hasn't been willing to accept. Now, that notion is once again before the city council. Many people who have gone to the meetings have spoken in favor of an orderly transition from university hands to the city. And for the most part, and I can't speak for everyone on this, but the activists right at the moment tend to think that we would have a better working relationship with the city than we do with the university. And I think that the merchants definitely feel that if we could get the university out of the picture, we could end a lot of the confrontations that have happened on that site. Now, unfortunately, the group that made up the plan was heavily dominated by people from the University of California. It was a group of 18 people, 9 chosen by the university, 9 chosen by the city council members. But of the 9 chosen by the city council members, 4 or 5 have very strong university ties and represent sort of the right-wing establishment of the student government.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been very difficult trying to come to consensus during that period about what should really happen for the good of the university, the city, and people that don't relate to either one but are just out there as citizens.
Mm-hmm.
What we had suggested to them, because the university has indicated that it still wants to maintain a hand in what goes on there,
mm-hmm.
is a sharing of power.
Mm-hmm.
That we could set up a board of stewards, for an example, that had perhaps 3 members that the chancellor could appoint and 3 members that the mayor could appoint and 3 members that were elected from the community. To sit down and actually have some of the authority as well as the responsibility for trying to figure out what we want to do with the park.
Michael, let me interrupt you, because what I want to do is I would like to continue this interview. I have a show on Monday and Friday on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I can only shoehorn in as much as you've said now, but I would like you to, I'd like to get back to you maybe this weekend and possibly Monday morning to get updates on what you're saying. Plus, of course, I want to pursue the question of what happened with the so-called consensus process that was going on even prior to when this youth committee was discussing the issue. I understand you had a business throughout the summer where a fancy paid organization did a whole business attempting to do a consensus in the community around the issue of what to do with the park.
That's right.
And that came out with a considerably different result than the use committee's proposal that is now being considered by the city council.
Well, it did. In fact, they had tried to achieve consensus, but there were some very basic areas in which we have failed to reach consensus.
Well, I want you to talk about that. I'd also like you to talk about your perceptions of what happened at the last city council meeting when I guess there were many speakers in opposition to curtailment of the free, the services in the park or the clothing and food situation and the grading of the park that was proposed and the new sports courts. Can I get back to you, let's say, this weekend or Monday and continue this conversation? And for the benefit of our listeners, can you give us any kind of, do you have any official ties or title or any way you want to be described around this issue?
Well, I'm a member of the Joint City-University Youth Standards and Evaluation Committee, and I've been appointed by a member of council, council member Carl Woodworth, to represent the actual district within the city that the park resides in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my role, my official role in regard to this.
Well, I appreciate your raising, you're describing the history as you have and raising some of the issues that are at stake, and I would like you to continue your in-depth analysis. I'm swamped, as you can see, so I will talk to you later. Thank you very much.
And that was Michael Pachovas, community activist and certainly knowledgeable fellow on the question of the ongoing People's Park struggle in Berkeley. And we're going to be hopefully hearing more of Michael on the Monday show. I'm going to try to do another interview, though I will be running up to San Francisco tomorrow. Might even be taking a car full of people up. Who knows? If you're interested, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, for the demonstration for the rights of Food Not Bombs and the rights of homeless people in cities across the nation, specifically Food Not Bombs' right to serve them and other groups to serve them free food. We're going to kind of segue right into an interview with Food Not Bombs activist Keith McHenry, a San Francisco Food Not Bomber who has been around for a decade and a half, began his Food Not Bombs work in Cambridge, Massachusetts, then began working in San Francisco in 1987. He has been on the cutting edge of a lot of the Food Not Bombs work and on the business end of police batons a number of times, beaten by police repeatedly, dragged into court on bogus charges, and nothing seems to faze this guy. He still continues. Before we do, however, in case Presentium and Ann want to have any last words before they leave, anything you want to say? No, they're just nodding. Ann's falling asleep there after having crushed her skull on the low door jam for the couple of impromptu jumping jacks. Let's hear a bit of Keith McHenry.
Well, I'm talking to Keith McHenry, or Katzenjammer Keith, as I persist in calling him, a Food Not Bombs activist in San Francisco who is doing the Rent is Theft tour. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
And here it's, well, we're on Friday, January 5th of the new year. I think you have a demonstration coming up tomorrow here in the San Francisco around harassment of Food Not Bombs in Arcata, Sacramento, and even in your very own San Francisco.
All right. So that definitely is coming up, and a lot of people, it looks like it will be well attended, so I encourage people, if they are going to be able to come up to do that, it will be at 16th and Mission Street in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the next...
what time will it be?
At 12 noon.
That's tomorrow, Saturday, January 6th.
Correct. And then...
Will food be provided?
We're going to have free lunch and...
salsa?
So, yeah, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then we think we're going to march the 24th. That's what the... There are actually more details being planned at 11 o'clock this morning.
Support a Homes Not Jails action, or...?
No, just to get around to our community and to alert more people about what's going on. And we did get some media. The Daily Journal yesterday, the San Francisco Daily Journal, reported on the march, actually.
That's a legal periodical, isn't it?
Yeah, DA lends a hand to Food Not Bombs, and it's got a... It's pretty a wacky article. I'm actually writing a letter to the editor about it as we speak.
it's the new district attorney, Terrence Hallinan, who also served food with Food Not Bombs at one point with a chef's hat on,
correct,
as well as testified at my sentencing hearing in November, actually in February of 1994, when I was sentenced to 2 months in jail for the crime of serving rice and bagels in front of City Hall.
Yeah, and here it goes, district attorney-elect Terrence Hallinan has publicly stated one of the first things he will do after taking office on January 8th is to help the group obtain permits to serve food. Whether the group wants them, however, is another story.
Uh-oh.
Leaders at Food Not Bombs have maintained they do not need permits because the state health code was written to cover only those who sell food for profit. And, of course, that is true. In the first three pages, it does make that pretty clear that associations who are sharing food are exempt from the California Code of Public Health. And a fact not missed on many. And then it was, says Hallinan hopes he can persuade the group to obtain the permits. Even if he does not succeed, Food Not Bombs has a sympathetic ear in the San Francisco District Attorney's Office. In Arcata, meanwhile, five Food Not Bombs people in the...
Six, actually. Six,
yeah. Face civil contempt charges for continuing to serve free food to the in the town square. The group has planned a local rally Saturday at Mission and 16th Street to protest the charges. So it's kind of unusual to end up having a protest announced in the Daily Journal in San Francisco. That's the official paper of the San Francisco...
I think you've hit the big time here, Keith.
Right. So apparently there's even more extensive legal article being fashioned is today, supposed to come out in today's Daily Journal or tomorrow's Daily Journal. Monday's Daily Journal. So
the lawyers have their ears to the ground.
Yeah, that's a funny thing, because the judge and the one probation officer actually called me on hearing about this, and kind of a funny bunch of things have happened just from this little 3-5 paragraph little article. But the meetings we've been discussing our position on the permits issue,
mm-hmm,
and generally speaking, what we have consensus on as a San Francisco Food Not Bombs is that we are not pursuing permits,
mm-hmm,
and that we will continue to serve food in the manner and way that we have been.
This could put you on a collision course with District Attorney Terrence Hallinan.
It could well do that, because what is not really, there's a lot of details that are up in the air. While we are not pursuing a permit, and I think that's because it's clear you don't need a permit to, somebody last night in the meeting.
You will accept a permit.
That we have not consensed on yet. We're having a lot of debate whether we will accept a permit or not accept a permit. That's where our debate is, and it's and that's yet to be decided.
I was reading that Utah Food Not Bombs actually applied for a permit because of their fear that and got a permit, apparently, because of their fear that they would not be supported by the general community if they served food without a permit and then were arrested for it. So.
Right. Well, actually, the two members of Salt Lake City Food Not Bombs were at our meeting last night and said that that was a serious mistake on their part, that they would certainly not encourage anybody to do that again.
Have they then been harassed since that time?
Well, the whole permit process is one long harassment. And the thing is that Terrence Hallinan isn't just the only player in town involved with the permit process. And when he last walked us through it, while he has good intentions, we ended up meeting with Dennis Martell, the San Francisco Police Department, and
who's had a long and notorious history of harassing Food Not Bombs.
Right, and we got internal police memos up the wazoo and videotape of him saying the issue isn't food, it's that we're making an anarchist statement and they're not going to allow it. Of course, at the meeting with Hallinan, he said the police department has never had a problem with Food Not Bombs, and that they're only doing what the mayor had ordered them to do, and that there's no problem. But that is actually a lot of bunk, because 500...
A man with many tunes.
Right, that's just... And the health department's the same way. They just keep saying that. And they said we're uncooperative, and that they recount these two stories where they actually set us up intentionally and screwed us. The two stories being After we got health permits, they just briefly, in one case, what they did was the health department arrived at 11:15, according to their own documents and testimony in a health department hearing, and wanted to see the permit, the original permit displayed. Well, at that 11:15, since our permit, our Recreation and Parks Department permit allowed us to be there at 11, we had really merely nothing but a bunch of equipment piled up in the middle, in front of the City Hall, and me and one other person were trying to assemble it with the help of the people that were waiting to eat, who were scurrying around also trying to help us because they could see that this guy was giving us a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
And we asked him to come back in 30 minutes once we had...
I remember this was 1989, right?
Right, this is 1989.
I'm going to have to break into this, because much as I appreciate your historical perspective and normally welcome it...
Right, wait for your show.
I got someone waiting in the car, and I've also got to do some printing out here. So let me ask you to summarize in the next 2 or 3 minutes what you think are the most important things that people need to know in the next week, let's say, in terms of upcoming demonstrations, protests, and events.
Well, I say that... in the next couple of weeks, we have, besides the protest Saturday in San Francisco, Tuesday night there will be a protest in Berkeley, because there is now renewed attacks against Food Not Bombs in People's Park by the University of California and some of the members of the Berkeley city government, and they had made it clear that they were going to wait until after Christmas because they did not want to disturb the shopping season by a conflict with Food Not Bombs. Now apparently the city government wants to start that conflict now that the retail business has collapsed anyway on Telegraph Ave. So they're going to, that's at 4:30 People's Park, and it's a should be a funny march going over to Provo Park and then to the city council meeting. Also, there's harassment by the guides in Sacramento, California, and again, the big story is the fact that 6 people could end up in jail on Monday afternoon for as much as 30 days for feeding the hungry in Arcata Plaza. So those are all going on, and then the other really kind of disgusting thing for those people that are Willie Brown watchers is Willie Brown is providing 10,000 meals to the homeless during the inauguration, but he's providing those meals in the part of town out of sight, out of mind, so the homeless will not be, they're participating in the inauguration by eating at Clyde Memorial Church and at other places not near the inauguration, and the goal, of course, is transparent, make sure the homeless go over here.
Where is the inauguration?
And that would be also on Monday at 11:30 at Yerba Buena Park in Mission and 4th. So,
well, who knows who will show up at the inauguration?
I, unfortunately or fortunately, will not. I will be at the courthouse, hopefully seeing the Arcata Food Not Bombs people win their civil contempt.
That's up in Eureka, California.
That's in Eureka, California, at the courthouse, 8:30 in the morning. And there'll be caravans leaving. I can actually take one person from San Francisco. I mean, so if a person can get up here from Santa Cruz, I can take them there and back.
I'll see if I can. I may be in San Francisco on Saturday, so we can talk about it then.
Right. Well, hope to see you at the rally and bring a million friends.
Hey, not likely, but they'll be with me in spirit.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Keith.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And that was Keith McHenry, San Francisco Food Not Bombs activist, giving us an update on demonstration tomorrow in San Francisco in support of attacks against, actually in support of the defense of Food Not Bombs against bureaucratic official anti-homeless attacks. The Arcata Food Not Bombs trial, which is going to begin, I guess, Tuesday. No, I guess it's Monday in Arcata, up there at the Eureka Courthouse. The People's Park situation is heating up at the Tuesday City Council meeting. A demonstration starts around 4:30 or 5 in Brooklyn. And finally, Santa Cruz, we have our own problems. On Tuesday at 3:30, City Council at City Hall is going to be considering giving yet more money to the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, the Hopeless Citizens Committee for the Homeless. This is the group that owns the open-air sheltered property and closed it down in violation of a verbal contract that was duly recorded by witnesses and by tape recordings, possibly even by video artists. Contract made November 29th, which guaranteed that that open-air shelter, which took care of 200 to 250 people, would be kept open for essentially until February. They mentioned the day January 1st, actually 10 days after January 1st, or 10 days after the so-called community house permits were granted. And of course, everyone knows, I think by this time who's been listening to this issue, that community house is a set of 10 trailers donated from Stanford, which the Citizens Committee for the Homeless intend to plant on top of their property to supplant the homeless open-air shelter campground area that has been serving people so well these last 2 years. But it isn't a $1 million project like the transitional housing project is. And the Citizens Committee is going to go trolling for funds, panhandling for money on Tuesday at 3:30 at City Council. They're going to try to get leftover CDBG money, which is Community Block Development Grant Funds, for those of you who like those kinds of titles. And everybody and anybody who feels that community house transitional housing may be fine, but it should not be used to displace emergency shelter, and the City Council should not support such a blatant, errant misuse of the property, and particularly in the face of the most recent broken promise of the Citizens Committee that forced the city to back them up. Actually, they didn't have to, but they seemed to want to. Mayor Rotkin and Squawk Box Scott Kennedy, or Cave-In Kennedy, as I've called him, came hustling in to threaten the campers that in spite of any contract that had been made with the Citizens Committee, the city was all ready to arrest them, you know, impound and or kill their dogs, you know, ship them off to jail on camping tickets, and drive them out into the bushes and under the bridges on December 19th. That's what Rotkin threatened. And then, of course, great humanitarian that he was, he offered 40 or 50 of them an opportunity to go up to New Brighton Beach for 2 weeks so they could be out of the hair of the merchants for the holidays. Well, how nice of him. This same city council is going to be considering giving tens of thousands of dollars to the Citizens Committee for the Homeless for its trailer project. This is a project, again, to blacktop over the only open-air shelter area in the city, the only legal place to sleep in the city, and the only open-air shelter of its kind in the nation. That's what Celia Scott brought up at the last Citizens Committee for the Homeless board meeting. Not, I would add, to support the open-air shelter. No, no. She was behind a poverty pimper, Paul Lee, and pardonnez-moi, Paul Merceau, all the way. Paul Merceau, as you may know, was the head of the Coral Street open-air shelter, the paid agent of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, who, with Community House Director Daryl Dodgem Darling, promised the campers that there would be this period during which they could continue to camp at the campground, which would go at least until January 1st, actually 10 days after January 1st, and longer if the permit process went on longer. And since permits aren't due to come up till January 25th or 26th, then that would be 10 days after that, which would be early February. Unless there were a real flooding of the field that required renegotiation, in which case they would get together with the campers and renegotiate. No such meeting was ever called. The edict came out on December 12th. The campers had to leave. The campground was declared closed at that time, and they fenced it off on the 19th. So they lied. They broke their word. And when this issue was brought up at the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's meeting, the Board of Directors meeting, when I tried to inform the Board of what their negotiating agents, Paul Merceau and Daryl Darling, were doing in the name of the Citizens Committee, Paul Lee, the chairman of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, actually on videotape as he did this, gaveled me to silence and adjourned the meeting, rather than even finish the business that he was engaging in, rather than hear the campers who had things to say, who had come all the way in from New Brighton Beach. And it's a consequence of all this moving around, all this stress, because what's happened is the people who went to New Brighton Beach had to move again twice. They had to move for 2 days to Monseca Beach, and then they had to move back to New Brighton Beach. They got a donation that enabled them to stay on beyond the date that they were forced to move out of New Brighton Beach. Has produced great, great stress. And you can read in the Sentinel today. One guy has been arrested for attacking a bench with a hatchet. Another couple had a domestic fight that required the police. Of course, Harry, he died of a mixture of prescription drugs and alcohol and in a sort of an accidental overdose. People there did not think it was a drug overdose in any recreational sense. It was an overdose that was because of a prescription problem when mixed with alcohol. On New Year's Eve, again, the high pressures and tensions that have been produced by Daryl Darling, Paul Merceau, and it's the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board, Celia Scott, Paul Fotenhauer, Paul Lee, and let's not forget all those other littler members of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless who could have taken action, but who didn't, who sat silently month after month while I and others brought the issue patiently, politely, with all due decorum to the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board meetings. We brought the issue to the City Council open-air shelter meetings politely, that the Citizens Committee's behavior here was seemingly was to go ahead with their own bureaucratic trailer project, come hell or high water. Deaths have resulted. Mike Sheridan has blamed Mayor Michael Rotkin and all the other council members who are responsible for lying, for misleading people about this, for not supporting the open-air shelter. That includes the entire council, including Birdseed Buyers. I have a call in here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're on the air.
Yes, I would like to really bring to attention some certain things that I believe you yourself are obviously not aware of, because you seem to be in this vicious cycle of blame, and you seem to be really hurt about the homeless situation, which is a major area of interest here in Santa Cruz, mm-hmm. I do believe. But I think that a lot of your efforts and your energies could be spent on trying to gather, funds to build a homeless shelter, funds to help people so they don't have to stay in, like, traps like the Fulton Air Motel.
Let me ask you this. What is your first name?
My first name is Grace.
Grace, I'm Robert, but let me deal with that point you raised about raising funds to build shelters.
I just heard you, try to blame, Paul Merceau and these city council members for, the death and overdose of some homeless people.
This isn't me speaking. This is the campers who are on the scene. You know, I mean, I myself am actually a little more prudent in what I say, but I have great sympathy for those who said this. But let me deal with this point you raised, and it's an important one, about fundraising. Indeed, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless has been one of the biggest fundraising groups in town. They've been beating the drums for a decade and getting money for different programs, and some of them, I'm not criticizing all their programs,